The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Fast Money starts right now, live from the NASDAQ market site in New York City's Times Square. Tonight's lineup, Tim Seymour, David Seberg, Steve Grasso, Guy Dami. The markets are on a tear. The Dow soaring nearly 200 points as earnings and taxes lift stocks. Is this just the beginning of a year-end rally? We will explain. Plus, the man who called the Walmart rally in August, former JCPenney CEO Ron Johnson, is here for a victory lap. He'll tell us what other retail name could have a Walmart-like revival. We start with the story breaking just moments ago. Comcast reportedly approached 21st Century Fox to buy all or parts of the company. Let's get to Julia Borson for the very latest. A developing story right now, Julia. What do you know?
The latest is that Comcast is in talks not to buy all of Fox, but to buy certain assets, those entertainment assets. It would not include the broadcast network, likely a similar assortment of assets that Disney was interested in. So the entertainment assets plus Sky in the UK and Star in India. And I think those two international assets are particularly important because Comcast, though its cable assets are here in the U.S., NBC Universal is obviously more global, but this would really allow Comcast, if made this purchase, to position itself more as an international company. So we have confirmed with the source that the talks are still happening between Fox and Disney, and that it would be with a structure similar to what Disney is pursuing. So now we see Fox shares up 5.5% on this news, Comcast shares over 1%. So certainly a lot of movement in this media space right now, Melissa.
So we've had earnings reports since that initial report that David Faber had reported about Disney being interested in some of the assets of Fox. And Lachlan Murdoch said that they had the required scale to compete in the entertainment side of the business. How do you square this? I mean, was he just, playing the game here, do you think?
Well, look, Lachlan Murdoch wants everyone to know, all his shareholders to know, and he reiterated this at Fox's shareholder meeting just this week. He said, Lachlan Murdoch said, is that they do not need more scale. They're just fine operating at the size that they are. The message there is, we will be fine if one of these deals doesn't happen. But at the same time, if you listen to the language that Lachlan and James Murdoch used on their earnings call last week and then on their shareholder call this week, they talked a lot about the value of their brands. This is something that both NBC Universal, Comcast, and Disney have been very interested in, this big IP, global brands that can be exploited across multiple platforms, like theme parks, as well as on television and movies. They also talked about their global presence. This is something that both Disney and Comcast are interested in doing more of. And I think that Sky in the UK and particularly Star in India are very valuable assets for these companies that are looking for more global exposure.
Do you think that a move like this, I mean, the international case you made very well, Julia, but in terms of domestic, in terms of providing something over the top, does this help Comcast on that front?
Well, I think Disney has already laid out its over-the-top direct-to-consumer plans. They want content, they want brands, they want to be able to do a Disney-branded service direct-to-consumer that's launching in 2019. They've already laid down that plan. Comcast has its cable networks. They already have, Xfinity. They have all these different services, and they're building in different flexibilities, and they take some services, bundled together with broadband. So they have all sorts of different packages, but they are still selling TV services. So I don't know if Comcast would do a direct-to-consumer branded product the way that Disney is with what it's doing for its Disney-branded products. But if you think about the value of those brands, I mean, NBC Universal has a movie studio. They also have the theme parks. There are various ways they could take the Fox brands and do more with them. I mean, I do think it's worth noting we're here in Los Angeles, the Universal Studios theme park, that's just around the corner. There's a big Simpsons ride.
Right.
Simpsons is one of those valuable Fox brands.
All right, Julia, thank you. Julia Borson in Los Angeles with the latest on this developing story. It's interesting because you were making the point, Tim, that about
a couple of weeks ago.
Here was Fox trading at $25 going into earnings. And before we get to earnings, we get this Disney announcement, which boosted the stock up kind of halfway where it got to. Earnings actually were very constructive, largely. And then we have this announcement. So the stock's now moved about 25% over where we were. And it gets back to what's the multiple in this sector? I mean, Fox had given a lot of ground on their multiple. And you could make an argument that this changes the dynamic. But again, if it changes it for Fox, it probably changes it for other people. And this would not be the place I'd go for value in the sector.
Yeah,
I don't understand why Fox would do the deal. It doesn't make any sense from my perspective. Content is the name of the game. You own content, you sell the network. So why would Fox want to sell their content off? It doesn't make any sense at all to me. So I don't think a deal like that gets done
because
with
their news business is crushing it. Because
it's fine.
It generates a lot of cash.
But content reigns, and in the value of content, you see it from the standpoint of it's being bid up for a reason because that is what's driving the business right now.
Well, it's definitely been a performer in the space. I think that whenever there's smoke, there's usually fire. And when you look at the other networks or the other properties that are in the area, CBS, Viacom, these have been both been beaten up. And it probably puts a bid under the whole space because people are looking for acquisitions. Now, one might be better than the other. I do believe that Fox is better than the other. But if you look at Viacom's down 32% year to date. You get something like a CBS that's down 11% year to date. I would start looking at those as well because it's going to raise all boats, the rising tide. So
yeah, I mean, if a deal gets done, it does put a multiple out there that could be the multiple for the other ones. But in terms of the move that we're seeing after hours in Comcast, does this make Comcast a better company with these assets? And I ask this because they've gotten lumped into, they have broadband and they could still charge for broadband even if people cut the cord, and they're, right? And they go to skinny bundles, whatever. But that's not the way the stock is traded. The stock is traded as if cutting the cord is Comcast's problem as well.
Answer your question, does it make it a better company? Yes, at a reasonable price, it makes it a better company. If they have to overpay for it, then it's entirely different conversation. You have Disney on the other side. This has become a bidding war. A couple things stand out to me. You know, Tim talked about Fox. Now this stock feels like it has room up back up to the old 2015 high, which was $38. But I go back to Viacom again, which, by the way, made a 7-year low today, I think, $22 and change. But at a certain point, listen, I know the Viacom quarter wasn't great. The media networks, I thought, was pretty good for Viacom. And is it deserved of half the valuation of many of its rivals? And I don't think it deserves the same valuation, but I don't think it should be half the valuation. What does that mean? I think just in terms of rising tide type thing, I think Viacom should be looked at here.
All right. For more on this developing story, let's bring in Michael Wolff, author of The Man Who Owns the News, Inside the Secret World of Rupert Murdoch. Michael, great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
What do you make of a Comcast plus some of Fox assets tie-up?
Well, I think we should put a stake in the ground and say what we now know, because last week with Disney we had rumors. Now it's very clear that Fox has put itself up for auction. So I think that we can absolutely say there is going to be some transaction that involves Fox assets. So Fox, 21st Century Fox, the Murdochs as we know them are now almost a thing of the past.
Wow, that is saying a lot for a family that has really shaped business, for the business of news as well as
entertainment. This is a transformational moment. So the Murdochs are retreating from the media business. So Rupert Murdoch, the man that made the modern media business, all of the consolidation that we have seen now for nearly 30 years has been trailing Murdoch. So now he has, at this point in time, he is going in the opposite direction. That's big.
This, though, Michael, assumes that by selling these assets, the news business won't become a stronger part. That there's this notion amongst the Murdochs right now that they've got to jettison the rest of this stuff so they can focus on news and become the powerhouse that it once was. I mean, the roots of the Murdoch empire, right, is in news.
The Rupert Murdoch's roots are certainly in news, but having said that, entertainment has always been a larger part of this company. This company grew on the basis of its investments in the entertainment business. The news business has been, for a long period of time, a good business for the Murdochs, but it did not put them into the stratospheric and international league. The news business now, or for the past number of years, has been a not very good business. So they are retreating to something that it's hard to find the logic here. Well, I mean, I believe that one of the things that Rupert Murdoch wants to happen is he wants to merge. He wants to take this company private, and he wants to merge the newspaper business, News Corp, back into Fox. He wants his business, or his original business, back together.
Hey, Michael, it's Tim Seymour. Thanks for joining us. So you said we've been trailing, or the media world has been trailing Rupert for 30 years. Are they trailing him now? Do I not want to be buying something that the Murdochs are selling? Shouldn't that be telling us something?
You know, I would not. Yeah, that if you believe Rupert Murdoch, if you trust his instincts, and remember the man is now 87 years old, you should be following him. But I think you also have to say, is this the Rupert Murdoch who has set out to lead this business, or is this a Rupert Murdoch, an 87-year-old Rupert Murdoch, who is now saying, you know, it is the autumn of his years.
Well said.
Yep. Michael, thanks so much for phoning in and joining us with your analysis. We do appreciate it. Michael Wolff. And this actually happens with a lot of companies with CEOs that are older. They
yeah, I mean, speaking
sell.
In the autumn of his years, Guy, do you want to take the next point?
Please speak louder. Whoa.
I'm just kidding.
Wow.
Welcome back, by the way. We've missed Guy for the last couple of days, so good to see you. Hi, Guy.
I'm waving. Hi.
Now, so if you listen to the Murdochs, they were making it clear on their earnings call that this isn't about us needing to have scale, and if we can't get scale, we're cashing out. So I'm not sure that that's the case. And what we're seeing right now is that the big boys need to get bigger at a time when antitrust is becoming, I think, more, you know, defensive on the ability to do that. But it's very clear that the media moguls are becoming vertical, and they're becoming bigger to succeed.
What does this say about Comcast? I mean, is this a deal that Comcast needs to do?
I think it's a great deal for Comcast. I think it's a horrible deal for Fox. So I look at it and say, again, they're reining in assets that are valuable assets, content assets. But I do not think I do not think Fox actually makes a deal like that. I think it is a bad deal for them.
Wait, it's a bad deal for them to sell these?
For Fox, yes. I believe you have to own content. That's the stand. You have to own content. And I think to divest them or to sell them off and just to own the broadcast is not a smart move.
Michael makes a good point in that this is the second whiff of reports that we have that Fox wants to sell assets. A deal will get done for these assets is his thesis. If that is the case, I would think that these assets are so great, other people would come in for these assets. Who else could come in for these assets? And does another cable provider want these assets, to your point, to have content?
Of course they do.
Let's play the game. Could a Google come swooping in at some point? Why not?
Could an Amazon come in for these assets?
So the non-traditional media companies, are they out there in the weeds? I don't know the answer to that question. I'll say this about... There's something going to be done with Fox, whether it's a good deal or a bad deal. They're clearly putting themselves out there. And I do think this stock continues to trend higher from here.
Yeah. For Comcast, though, the international footprint is really interesting because they do have these properties. Universal is around the world, and it doesn't have the commensurate presence around the world via cable channels or distribution.
Right. But I think you're on to something on the content arm. The superhero content that Fox does have, that Disney probably wanted to put together with their arm of it. So maybe you said Amazon, I'll say Netflix. Maybe you start to see some unbundling of a lot of these different things because Netflix wants some content. I don't know if that deal would get done. But if Fox wants to sell assets, then there's a ripe audience that would pay a decent chunk for these assets, but I still go back to look at the undervalued entities in this sector. Look at Viacom. Look at CBS. Look at the, because everything is going to start to be bid up. And there's a lot more beta in a name that's down 32% year to date.
By the way, Superhero Steve, you are really cultivating the superhero look here with that face. So Comcast, look, if this deal goes through and they get Sky, that deal's about to close. That will close June 30th. There was some question whether that deal was going to get done. I think it does get done. I think it's a very important element. Sky, when I'm traveling the globe, that's exactly what I'm watching. I do think that there's a lot of value to them expanding the global footprint, especially in a world where the media business really has no borders anymore. And I think content is being consumed on a global basis. Universal, I think, was a close second, and I think this actually puts them in the game now.
And the rumor about Disney coming in and taking, you know, the TV and, you know, assets away. Investors invest in Disney for the non-TV assets. They're not investing in it for that. So I don't see investors actually buying into this trade. So I don't think Disney comes in and actually buys it. So
they're
maybe
buying the trade, though.
I mean, look, well, they're buying it.
The stock now
Disney doesn't need this trade anymore.
No.
They've completely changed the narrative, right? One earnings call.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, there was an earnings call where they changed the narrative to the negative, but this past one, it was definitely to the positive.
But
it's a different story now.
They changed the narrative, but you just look at the numbers. The last quarter that Disney reported a week or so ago were not good. I know Bob Iger's a genius, and he changed the narrative, but valuation, I do think Disney trades at a premium valuation. They deserve it, but I don't think they deserve the valuation that they're getting off that quarter, which was not very good. You can change all the narratives you want. The proof, as they say, is in the what?
Pudding. Doesn't this get worse for Netflix? And you know how I feel about Netflix. But we get to a place here where clearly the guys who have distribution are now getting into a stronger content play. Or the guys that weren't, in the case of Disney, have now said it's all about distribution for us.
Or the guys who have content are getting more content. They're getting
bigger.
Well, so they've got much more leverage over Netflix, right?
Yeah, but they're curating their own content. They still have the international story. And it doesn't seem to be hurting Netflix. And
you're telling me that that there is no competitive threat whatsoever on the content front to Netflix. If Comcast owns its assets plus Fox's entertainment
There's
assets.
Always a competitive threat. Netflix curating their own content is getting bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of momentum behind it. And we're also talking about this as if it's a zero-sum game. I believe there's going to be a couple of different things that you're paying, whether it's on your app, on your laptop, or on your television. There's enough room for a lot of these guys to have a lot different streaming. It's not one buyer or one guy owns the whole space.
And this chase for content that we're seeing has been basically, it's been, you know, derived from Netflix's sort of efforts. I mean, they went out and they spent money. They basically own Hollywood. They go out
and
spend as much as they can do because they see the value in it. And guess what? Now you're seeing other players come in and realize the value there, and they're just behind the ball here. So
Disney's gone from a 19 multiple down to a 15. Viacom is about to fall through. Viacom's only content. I mean, you may not like their content, but why are content plays trading
content
at a discount?
Quality content.
But if content is so king, it is not king the way it was a year and a half ago.
One last question before we go to break. If this deal goes through, who gets the biggest multiple boost from this deal in the space?
Who should get the biggest multiple boost in the space?
Strongest player.
Comcast is a pretty big multiple right now. I think Comcast is 17.5-18 times forward earnings. I'm hard-pressed to think they can go much higher than that. But I'll go back to Viacom at 6 times. And just in terms of, I mean, I get it. It's a disaster. But, you know, you could have a 50% gain in market cap, in price-to-earnings multiple, get it up to a 9, and it's still cheap. So I think Viacom.
All right. Coming up, we will have much more on these reports that Comcast is looking to buy parts of 21st Century Fox as the story develops. Plus, a wild day for the market surging back after a rough week for stocks. Is this just the beginning of a turbocharged rally into year-end? We've got those details. And Tesla shares clawing back from bear market territory, down 19% from its 52-week high in September, as it is gearing up for its semi-truck unveil in just a few hours. Will the new vehicle blow your mind, as Elon Musk has promised? We've got all the details. And later, the man who called the Walmart rally in August, former JCPenney CEO Ron Johnson, is here. He'll tell us what other retail name could have a Walmart-like revival. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Applied Materials. Let's get to Josh looking for the details. Hi, Josh.
Well, Melissa, remember Applied Materials heading into this print was already up nearly 80% year to date. We initially tipped lower when those results crossed, and now moving into the green and the higher in the after hours here. On the company's conference call, CEO Gary Dickerson saying Applied Materials in 2018 can deliver strong double-digit growth across all segments. He talked about how the markets are getting stronger with a broad set of demand drivers, and by that he meant handset manufacturers adding more functionality, the emerging battle in AI, and new demand for display technology. Memory shipments, he said, are at record levels. He said industry dynamics there remain healthy. He said the customers are healthy as well. Yes, they're making a lot of investments, but they're also making a lot of money, and he gave a bullish forecast for spending on semi-equipment. Moving to display, they noted that was the fastest-growing business segment in 2017. Remember, this is a company that makes the products that manufacture those LCD and OLED displays. Display revenue is going to exceed, he said, previous estimates for 2018. It had been for at least 30%. And turning to that Q1 guide, Melissa, Q1 semiconductor systems, that's NAND and DRAM group, expected to grow 32%. Services group expected to grow 17%. Display expected to grow 6%, but higher in the balance of the year. Melissa, back to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Josh Lipton. We should note Applied Materials, one of the best performing chip stocks in the SMH this year, Tim.
Well, think about what's been going on in terms of the cellular phone, the refresh business, and think of what's been going on in the entire space. And I think it's a name that you listen to the performance they're getting in their core business. The valuation is not terrible at 19 times. In fact, relative to the peers, this is actually extreme value.
Where in chips do you go?
Well, Cypress Semi, I think, is breaking out. We talked about that a couple weeks ago, and I think that's still interesting. AMAT is interesting. Valuation's not rich, and their margins were better, and they guided higher. But you talk about history repeating itself. I mean, this stock doubled this year, as you said. Go back and look what this stock did from 98, basically, to 99, 2000. See, the same exact move right now, and the levels we're trading at now is exactly where we peaked out about 18 or so years ago. So if you've been fortunate enough to be an AMAT, this is a good quarter, but I would be taking money off the table 100%.
Micron, it's an easy one here. I've been in and out of the name. I thought it was a genius, buying it at 18, selling it at 30, and the stock is trading at $46 right now, so I look kind of silly. But if you look at David Tepper, around these levels, around the 42 mark, 40 to 42, he says it's a double, and I have no reason to doubt him when you look at NAND and DRAM prices.
One of his top holdings.
I mean, I like Micron as well. I love Micron, actually, but I do think AMAT is a stock you can continue to own. I think Tim hit it on the head. It's not expensive here, not super expensive here, I should say. And look at double-digit growth. They're hitting on all cylinders. You just stick with it. The momentum's there.
All right, still ahead. It is the story of the after-hour session. Comcast looking to buy parts of 21st Century Fox. We'll have much more on this story. Fox, by the way, is up by about 7% on the news. Comcast, the parent of this network, is up by 1.2%. So we'll have all the latest right after this. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, first in business worldwide. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast.
You just blew my mind.
That's what Tesla founder Elon Musk hopes to do when he unveils his big semi-truck in just hours from now. We are live on the scene when Fast Money returns.
This is about giving hardworking taxpayers bigger paychecks, more take-home pay. This is about giving those families who are struggling peace of mind. It's about getting this economy to grow faster so we get bigger wages, more jobs, and we put America in the driver's seat in the global economy once again.
It looks like Wall Street is the one in the driver's seat. The Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, doing a bit of a victory lap after the House passes the GOP bill, and everything is awesome. Again, after a volatile week, the Dow soaring at one point more than 200 points today. This is Walmart and Cisco surge following their earnings report. The Nasdaq made a new record, and that tax euphoria is adding to the gains. So tax reform moving along, earnings continue to send stocks flying as the start of a year-end rally. I mean, seasonality is pretty powerful this time of year. Guy.
I think so. I mean, it's, you know, we're a week away from Thanksgiving. Holidays come very quickly.
Gobble, gobble,
happy turkey day. You talk about it in June, but people will chase into year end. And with there seems to be no exogenous event right there on the horizon that's going to derail this thing. So, again, I say it all the time. The market doesn't give you ample time to sell the highs. We've been floating around here now for seemingly months, which means in my world we continue to grind higher, regardless of what you think about sort of the world at large.
Well, when you really look at what's happening, right? So we're rallying on taxes, or at least something getting done. But I think we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves because the House, this vote is an easy one.
Right.
When you look at the Senate and you look at Murkowski and Collins and McCain and Johnson, there's a lot of reasons why this thing can really get a fist in your face, so to speak. So I'm not sure. That would be the thing that could take us off track as far as the year-end rally, in my opinion, because that's why we indeed rallied today.
Russell tells me that things are going to be awesome.
Well, I tell you what. I mean, Russell's been throwing fists, you know, anytime there's a whiff of taxes.
Yeah.
And you can't tell me that this market isn't needy of a tax deal. I mean, this is the debate that goes on. I would say this about today's market. Even though I think bullish sentiment right now is still at almost record levels and the market is overly complacent, we got to a place where actually many things were oversold. So from a technical perspective, if you're looking at momentum, if you're looking at RSIs, relative strength indicators, you're at a place, you're also at major support. Look at the IYT or transports, which we follow, obviously, not just because some of these companies are important, because Dow theorists believe this is a tell for the economy. Bounces right off the 200. Emerging markets bounce right off the trend line. All the higher risks and the cyclical names got a huge bid, high yield rallied back. This needed to happen. I'm not sure one day takes the market out of that trend that it was in yesterday, but this was important.
Sort of along those lines, I mean, if you're a fund manager, right, and you have ridden this rally, a rally that you probably never thought would have happened on the first of, or no, not the first of January, when Donald Trump was elected president.
Right.
Wouldn't you be inclined to take profits at the
end? No, I think the narrative is set up for, you know, they're riding the wave. Again, the investment, the strategies have changed a lot. I mean, there's no reason to take money off the table here, chips off the table if you own the winners. The winners will stay well bid, or at least you'll see a decline in selling into year end. So I think the winners stay well bid. The losers are going to stay sold.
Even without a tax deal, David?
Well, no, hold on. The tax deal, look at today. Today was earnings. Today really was earnings in a shift.
No.
Well, when you walked in this morning, the futures were up 8 points, eight handles when I walked in, and the tax deal
was. It was both. It was definitely both.
We saw that occur, but I'm
great
saying.
Great earnings in for the last 3 weeks.
Right, but high yield, everything that we saw shift overnight.
But to Tim's point, we don't get a tax deal and we slide right
back
down.
If we don't get a tax deal, we absolutely sell off. We probably have a shallow sell-off that should be bought aggressively. But at the end of the day, we're not up here because of tax. We are up here because of really strong earnings, really, you know, strong basic global growth, if you will, the narrative there. Unless there's a crack in that, I got to tell you, I think the market continues to work.
There is a bit of a crack real quick, and Tim can speak far more intelligently than I can about this.
What kind of crack are you
talking about? It's a lot of pressure.
Chinese 10-year yields are now either side of 4%. Haven't seen that in quite some time. Yes. They seem to be tapping on the brakes, if not stepping on the brakes, in terms of their credit markets. Again, nobody seems to care yet. I don't know when people start to care. But that's something out there as well. We talk about the yield curve all the time. I won't talk about
it. Well, rates are back at 2013 levels. And so in China, after the People's Congress, which ended about 2 weeks ago, people were very concerned that they are now in a position. They greased the rails going into it. Everything was perfect. Now they're going to tighten it up. Look at commodities. Copper's been down. Copper's down almost 10% over the last week and a half. Oil's run out of a little bit of gas. I do think that the global economy is chugging along. I think it's important to watch China. I still think interest rates are a big deal. And I think if you look at the two-year note, and if you look at the five-year note, it tells you that there are sensitive parts of the global credit curve. And I still think that's something you should be watching.
Still ahead, breaking after hours, Comcast looking to buy a parts of 21st Century Fox. Both stocks on the move in the after-hours session. We'll have all the details. Plus, it is the moment we have all been waiting for. Tesla's big unveil of its new semi-truck tonight in California. Phil Lebeau is there. And Phil, Tesla's been teasing this pretty hard on Twitter.
Yes, they say it's going to blow our mind. What exactly will Elon Musk tell us about their electric semi, or will it leave us with more questions than answers at the end of the night? That story when Fast Money returns.
Let's get back to Julia Borson with more breaking news. Julia.
It seems that there is yet more interest in Fox's assets. Now Dow Jones is reporting that Verizon Communications is also exploring acquiring parts of Fox. Of course, this comes just on the heels of news that Comcast is interested in buying some of those Fox assets. This after last week, news broke that Disney was interested in buying some of those Fox assets. So it seems like Fox is out there now open to a sale of at least part of those, part of its assets, the entertainment assets. That, of course, includes international exposure through assets in Latin America, as well as Sky in the UK and Star in India. I'm drawing a lot of interest from these U.S. media companies that would like greater international exposure. Melissa, back over to you.
All right. Fascinating developments, Julia. Thank you. Julia Borson in Los Angeles. For more on this story, let's bring in media analyst Craig Moffett of MoffettNathanson. He's on the fast line. Craig, thanks so much for phoning in. What do you make of Verizon jumping in the pool?
Well, I'd be a little surprised about either one, either Comcast or Verizon. But Verizon has always said they're not interested in content. And while I suppose it makes sense to explore, they haven't shown all that much interest in following the AT&T blueprint or trying to vertically integrate. And now with the Department of Justice questions about whether that deal is possible, I'm not sure they would be in a rush to do it.
Yeah, I actually want to play you a soundbite from Greg Maffei, the CEO of Liberty Media. This is what he said about these vertical deals before.
How many subscription services are consumers going to step up for? So when you see things like Disney for Fox, don't know, but my guess is that was about getting scale, trying to increase their opportunity around digital
for Disney.
DTC,
yes.
For Disney, for a direct-to-consumer offering. Throw that in, though, with a challenge. You know, the government, by entering into the Time Warner AT&T merger discussions, has thrown all that a wrench into anyone's plans. I don't know how you could announce a big media deal today and have any confidence you know exactly what the government's going to do.
You're skeptical for those reasons? I mean, let's say a Comcast was successful in terms of agreeing on a price. Do you think that it would ultimately be rejected, Craig?
Well, I think it would certainly have a reasonably high risk of being rejected. I mean, remember, effectively what's leaking out of the DOJ right now in the AT&T merger is that they're not happy with the behavioral remedies that they applied to Comcast. And so they're effectively telling you they've got buyer's remorse for having allowed that deal to get through. So saying that they would allow Comcast to do yet another one is a bit of a stretch. Mm-hmm. You know, remember, again, Disney approached Fox before the news broke that the DOJ was looking to block the AT&T deal. So when that approach happened, everybody, all of us, thought that the AT&T deal was highly likely to be approved. Now it throws everything up in the air, and you really have to wonder how far somebody like Comcast would even try mm-hmm. when the risk would be so high.
Let's put aside the regulatory concerns and the possibility that any sort of deal could actually be blocked by the DOJ. Does this make sense, in your view, for Comcast to go after these assets or for Verizon to go after these assets? Does it make you more bullish on Comcast or more bullish on Verizon?
Well, it depends which assets. You know, I think, look, cable networks right now are problematic. And the studio is quite interesting. Now, again, could the studio be merged with Comcast for antitrust reasons? Again, just on horizontal scale is a different question. But the studio is the Fox studio is an attractive studio, and there are certainly some attractive sports networks there and some other and general entertainment networks that are better than the average cable network. But I don't know that a lot of companies are looking to really significantly increase their exposure to cable networks right now.
Do you like the notion that Comcast could gain a more international presence in India, in the UK, in Europe, as well as in Latin America?
Well, yes and no. You know, there aren't a lot of direct synergies other than it would help them ensure distribution for the NBC assets if they had distribution assets elsewhere. And so there is some merit to that. But there again, I think it's a little hard to say that the NBC assets would have trouble finding their own distribution at reasonably attractive economics. And outside of that, the satellite business is clearly better elsewhere than it is in the U.S. But the U.S. deterioration in the satellite business is in some ways a harbinger of things to come everywhere for satellite platforms. So there again, I'd be surprised if Comcast said, I really want satellite as a distribution platform.
All right, Craig, we're going to let you go. Thanks so much for phoning in. We really appreciate it. Craig Moffett of MoffettNathanson. All right, so some serious regulatory hurdles potentially for whoever steps in, or at least whoever so far has apparently stepped in for these assets?
Without question. I mean, I think everybody understands that going in. But again, how do you trade the stocks on the back of it? I do think Fox A, despite the fact that it's up significantly, $25 stock a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, $32 now, I think that continues to trend higher. This clearly things are in play. But then names that are undervalued. We mentioned Viacom. And talk about like a Discovery, the Discovery Networks, mm-hmm. DISCA. Think about that stock, what that's done, and the valuation there. So I think all places with content now should get a boost in terms of valuation.
But if we are to believe that there are serious and possibly insurmountable regulatory challenges to any of these deals, shouldn't we fade every single move higher across the board?
Well, maybe, except for the fact that I think at some point this has been a wake-up call about the value of these assets. I mean, the assets have been driven to a place where people say, as we talked about earlier in the show, content a year and a half ago was fetching a very high multiple. The fact that this, you know, this Justice Department is now saying we're not going to be comfortable at all with behavioral commitments by corporations anymore, when in fact we did that before, is something that I think
you're going to be able to find out if it's political with the AT&T Time Warner.
It is
with
political.
CNN. But you're going to find out if there's another 100%. Deal and another deal goes through. That's how you're going to figure it out, number one. Number two, they're going to figure out how to make these deals go through because they see the environment, they see the landscape, and they will shred through whatever they need to shred through to make a deal that's worthwhile for investors.
All right. Still ahead, Tesla set to unveil its highly anticipated semi-truck later tonight in California. CEO Elon Musk has been teasing it for months. So will the new vehicle blow your mind, as he promises? We've got the details. Plus, Walmart posting its best day in nearly a decade. The man who called the rally back in August, Ron Johnson, will be here with an even bigger call on a different retail name. Much more Fast Money on this very busy night. Welcome back to Fast Money. A big night for Tesla coming up. The automaker set to unveil its highly anticipated semi-truck at its design studio in Hawthorne, California in just a few hours. And Musk has said it will blow your mind. Phil LeBeau is coming to us from Redondo Beach, laying out what to expect from tonight's event. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Melissa. It'll be interesting once we finally see this truck that we can say, okay, what is it all about beyond the design? Because as you mentioned going into the commercial break, this is all we've seen over the last couple of months, along with these teases that this is going to be an incredible reveal, that this is the beast. It'll blow your mind. It's a silhouette of a semi-truck. We'll actually see it in a couple of hours from now. But it brings up a couple of key questions. First of all, what's the range? Are we talking about something that has a range of 300 to 450 miles, as Tony Sacconaghi from Bernstein suggested earlier today, which would be interesting to some of the players in the truck space? Or does it need to be even higher than that, up around the 500 or 600 mile range? That would truly be perhaps one of those moves that would get trucking companies interested. That feeds into the second question. Do the economics work? And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how incredible the design and the look of this truck is. The trucking operators want to know, how much money can you save me per mile? Finally, when and where will this truck be built? There has been some suggestion that it is likely to be built in 2019 at the Fremont plant. But as we've talked about, Melissa, that plant is already busting at the seams. They probably have capacity in terms of a manufacturing line. But if you go out to that plant, there are cars parked, double parked all over the place, because there's just not enough space for all the employees out there. So as you take a look at shares of Tesla, keep in mind that we will see the truck tonight. And then we will finally get some answers to some questions. And I can't stress this enough, Melissa. I have talked to a number of trucking executives, people who run logistics operations. All of them say the same thing. I don't really don't care what this truck looks like. I want to know about the economics. Does it save me money? Will it save me money? Then I'll be interested.
Yeah. I'm sure they don't care if it makes a latte either, which is also promised by Elon Musk. All right, Phil, thank you.
Exactly.
Phil LeBeau joining us from Redondo Beach. And part of the economics of this, I mean, think about trucking and the engines. They become much more fuel efficient these days. So you can go much farther on one tank of gas. And then there's a balancing act with the battery. The bigger the battery gets, the heavier the truck gets, right? The smaller the range, or the less cargo this truck can transport. So it's a very difficult sort of thing to balance out.
Yeah, I would think, though, that for all the reasons that you just mentioned, this truck arm that they have is going to make their cars a lot better because they're going to have to really push technology and efficiency with a lot heavier vehicle than the S, the X, and whatever else that they come out with on the road. If you're looking at the stock for a trading vehicle, then you have to look at the 200-day, which is basically 320. Mm-hmm. It's had a nice rally back. Guy pointed out that level 290, traded down to 292. I would not buy the stock until it overtakes the 200-day moving average, 320, because now it's just in a trading range until it proves otherwise.
I hear what Phil says about the Fremont factory, and if the Model 3 production is going to ramp as Elon Musk promises it will ramp, mm-hmm. and I hear a capital raise coming.
No question.
In order to make their Reno factory capable of producing a semi-truck.
That hasn't been an issue, though, before, right? I mean, on some level to this point, it's almost been applauded. And again, despite $1.5 billion cash burn, it's a company that I think continues to have the capital markets open to them. But it's going to get down to, really, at some point, it's game time, Model 3, 2018. We've got to get there. And to be talking about the semi, which is a very interesting concept, because if they can get into the light commercial truck business, it's a massive business for them. And I think it's a place that they could disrupt. But right now, it doesn't sound like we're there.
Yeah.
And if you do, and if you are, then let's price this thing as an auto company.
All right. The thing, by the way, the unveil is going to be webcast tonight, so you can all watch it.
Oh, I'm going to be LinkedIn.
Still ahead, the man who called the Walmart rally back in August, Ron Johnson, is here with an even bolder call on the retail space. You won't want to miss it. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. It is the amazing race. Big box giant Walmart going head-to-head with online retailer Amazon in the race to claim dominance in the retail space. After blowout earnings today, Walmart had its best day in 9 years. The share soared nearly 11%, sending the stock to record highs. It is up 44% this year, while rival Amazon is up 52%. Well, still trailing behind Amazon by a little, it has been on a monster run in the past 3 months, jumping 23%. Our next guest, Ron Johnson, founder and CEO of Enjoy.com, former JCPenney CEO, said a few months ago on Fast Money that Walmart was Amazon's biggest threat. Welcome back to the show, Ron.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So how worried should Amazon be? Or is this the case that Walmart is giving Amazon a run for its money by being the vulture when it comes to the other retailers out there?
I think they should be really worried. Hmm. You know, I think this is a decade-long prize fight. You know, every quarter is a new round. But Walmart's coming back. And if you think about it, what they've got is they forward deployed inventory into things called warehouses that are really stores.
Right.
That are lower cost to operate than Amazon's distribution system. They're learning how to use those stores to serve customers. Sometimes the store does all the customer does the logistics. At times they bring it to them, but they've got a lower cost operation than Amazon.
So Walmart is making some pretty big investments when it comes to buying online properties, building out, expanding its online presence, which really has paid off in the past couple of quarters. But we've seen a degradation in gross margins. We've seen it go down 29 bips in the latest quarter. And then for U.S. only, it's 36. I mean, isn't
it's
this just
irrelevant.
A race to the bottom?
It doesn't matter. Because if you think about it, Walmart has said, we're not going to be adding stores. We're going to invest in making those stores more productive, making our distribution, our inventory more productive. So for decades, every year, 10% new stores. That's a lot of capital. Now they don't have to put their money in that. They put the money into digital competition. Amazon's going to have to drive the physical footprint to compete. And that's going to be, they're going to need the capital.
You see the stores as being an ability for them to actually distribute. I mean, they're not million square foot facilitation centers like Amazon has with technology that allows them to really take the online orders and distribute them properly. I don't see the solution for them to take the store and actually use it as a valuable asset, if you will.
No, it will happen because remember, half of America lives within 7 miles of a Walmart. Half of what you buy on Amazon is in a Walmart store, all these core commodities and stuff. And so having that distribution footprint with that inventory forward deployed is a comparative advantage that's hard to beat.
So Ron, when you talk about that physical presence, and, you know, I've been looking at this. When you look at Walmart and Walmart's customer basically isn't Amazon Prime's customer, Amazon Prime's customer, there's no real, I think that Walmart can steal market share from Amazon versus vice versa,
correct.
Basically. But when you talk about Amazon, who does Amazon come for if they need that type of warehousing or stores? Is it a Target?
It's Target. I would think it'd be Target. Whole Foods is the grocery, a Target is the mass. It's the upscale discounter, it's Target. Target's made a lot of investments last year on new brands, cleaning up the store, its image. The prime customer is heavily that Target young mom, so I think there's a big synergy there. Now, that'd be a big, bold move, but if they needed to move, you know, Target's got 1,500 stores on Main and Main of every city in the country.
You made a great call on Walmart, Ron. Yeah. Kudos Grass. To you.
Is there another, right here.
Is there another retailer that is poised for another Walmart-like revival?
I don't know about that, but I'd say Target got unduly hammered yesterday. They're basically doing what they said they do. You know, Brian's taking a long perspective. He's competing on product now. He's improving pricing. He's fixing the stores. He's working on distribution. He's working on every element all at the same time. I think Target's going to compete better than people think.
But if you had to choose and to put $1 to work in one of those, which one would you choose?
Oh, for the next decade, I'd pick Walmart.
Okay. Ron,
would
thank
you. Rather? Ron played Would You Rather.
He did. He did. Ron Johnson.
To what Mr. Johnson, real quick, merchandise inventories, Walmart, were up 0.7% for the quarter year over year. Sales growth was 4.2%. You asked them about margins. That's how they unlock margins going forward. They finally figured it out. Mm-hmm. So to your point, they absolutely can compete with Amazon.
All right. Coming up next, Final Trade. Time for the Final Trade. Tim Seymour.
Again, if you think there's a little momentum here, you stay in the IYT. Nice bounce today.
David Sieber.
Technical buy XOP. I'd be buying it here on the weakness.
Steve Grasso.
You know what's really been hidden under the radar?
What has been hidden under the radar, Steve?
Pulte Homes up about 16% recently against a flat S&P, flat to down S&P. Stay in the home builders. But Target, that would, if I got two final trades, Target would have been my other one.
You don't, but you already threw it out. It.
Steve Jobs, genius. You know who came up with the idea for the Apple stores? Anybody here know? Just sitting next
Ron
to
Ron Johnson.
Ron, genius. You like the Animal Planet?
Yes.
Very
much
fan,
so,
right?
Yes.
That's a, I watch it all the time. I mean, it's, but apparently not enough people watching. But Discovery Communications, on all this noise we talked about at the top of the show, that'll get
Be
you.
Be nice
that'll
to the Tigers.
I'm Melissa Lee. Thanks so much for watching. See you back here tomorrow again at 5 for more Fast Money. Meantime, Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.